Hello, and welcome to the Property Solopreneur podcast, a show for property investors and developers who want to build and grow their own profitable businesses. I'm sharing with you my decades of property experience and interviewing many other successful property people who are happy to share their varied and priceless knowledge freely. Business doesn't need to be hard, and nor do you need to be lucky. But as a certified strategist, I know you need a plan to work to. And a good start is by listening to other people's successes and failures. Why reinvent the wheel? This allows us to have a more in-depth knowledge of the wider property world. Hello, and welcome to this week's episode of the Property Solopreneur. Now, this episode is all thanks to Junior Hayden, who in an accountability group came up with some absolutely brilliant questions. And I thought, well, I don't know all the answers to this, but I know a girl who does. So Tina Walsh, who has set up NAPSA, which is the National Association of Professional Sourcing Agents, is someone who has her finger on the pulse of all things legal and required to be a property sourcer. It's fun. And I think that many people really just get a big buzz out of property sourcing. It's a way of property shopping when you're not paying the bills, to be quite honest. You get to see so many more properties. Also, if you are buying for a certain criteria, you get to see many more properties than you could buy. And you don't want to waste those, do you? You can create them into another income stream. And that income stream can absolutely be the way of generating the deposit for that next portfolio purchase. But there's always a but, isn't there? And the but is there are actually a lot of rules and regulations about this process that many investors and sourcers are completely in the dark about. Often they're not talked about. I have been to property meetings where people have told me I'm a barefaced liar, frankly, for putting all these rules and regulations in their way of making money. I first heard Tina speak when she brought her book out in 2017, I think it was. She no longer keeps it in print because the rules change so often that it's not economic to do so. And in fact, as a property sourcer, you need to upgrade your compliance every single year. The fact that rules and regulations are required is a sad fact that although you think and I think that we're very ethical and lovely people, always looking for the win-win in everything and would never intentionally do anything down, the sad fact is that we also have a prison system that is full of fraud and theft, who show us that perhaps not everybody feels and acts the same way that we do. Now, what Tina talked to me about today is going to horrify some listeners who hate rules and regulations and feel this whole topic is just a dampener and a way of stopping them doing what they want to do. Others will just see this as an easy system of rules and regs within which they can work, and they're going to grab their pads and pens and rush off to find all the links. Whichever fence you sit on, you are going to learn something in this conversation, which will either be reassuring or very educational. Spoiler alert, it's not a fluffy episode. It's a how to and why chat. Well, welcome to the Property Solopreneur, Tina. Now, for those people who've not met you or found you yet, who are you and what do you do?
My name is Tina Walsh, if you haven't heard of me. I'm often known as the Queen of Compliance, and that's probably the most polite reference among them. I have been operating and working in the property investment sector since about 2006, 2007. And since 2012, I operate a part-time sourcing business. And we also have a training company. And within the last 18 months, I've set up the National Association for Sourcing Agents. So we operate within the property investment sector, but the focus is predominantly on the sourcing side of the sector.
Marvellous. And of course, one of the reasons I wanted to talk to you today was the fact that sourcing is seen as the quick, easy way into making big, fantastic, easy money, isn't it? Where you don't need to do anything except be a property cupid, showing a property to an investor, and you get paid for doing nothing. That's the general gist of it, isn't it?
It is, yeah. And sadly, you see advertisements every day across the board on social media for make £7,000 from sourcing in a month, or leave your £70,000 a year salary job in 12 months. And yeah, that's not planet Earth, sadly, in the main.
No, I mean, there are some people who have managed to do that, but they are usually those who've got their ducks in a row. One or two of them did it quite a long time ago, dare I say it. They haven't been sourcing for some time, but they are still talking about it and selling it. But they haven't realised that things actually have moved on because, well, just as you mentioned the dreaded C word earlier, wasn't it? Compliance has now become a very important thing. Now, One of the things that actually struck me was, how do you define a property sourcer?
Yeah, it's a very good question, is that actually. We are intermediaries. So as the high street estate agent is the intermediary between the seller and the buyer, so is the sourcing agent. However, the high street estate agent usually has their fees paid by the seller,
yep,
and not the buyer. Whereas the sourcing agent, 99 times out of 100, has the fees paid by the buyer, although we can structure deals in either way, if that makes sense. So we have, in our sourcing business, structured the deal where the seller actually gave us the fee, not the buyer. So we can work either or way. But other than that, basically what you're doing is you're introducing and or negotiating the sale of a property or land in the UK between a person that wants to sell it and a person that wants to buy it. And you're doing it in pursuance of business and under instructions of a client. And that's the very rough translation of what estate agency work is considered to be under the legislation.
And I suppose some people will go, well, that isn't definitely, you know, I'm not an estate agent because I don't have a fancy office and I don't have a big high street presence or even a particularly big website. Many sources never use a website. We don't need to if you're good. So therefore, I'm not really very big. I don't have to be seen. No one will ever find out about me. But I don't think that's true in today's world, is it?
No, it's not. And sadly, for those that are getting caught, it's less so now. And I put my hand on my heart and hold my hand up and say that's my fault, because I've been talking about this for so long. And now through our national association, we are partnered with both property redress schemes that are government approved in the UK. And we work closely with NSLAT, which is National Trading Standards Estates and Lettings Team, plus, sadly, for a lot of property sources, HMRC's anti-money laundering team work with us. And they're learning from our experience, from me sourcing, from our knowledge of the sector. And in the last 2 to 3 months, we've had 3 sourcing agents come to us through the National Association asking for help because they've received fines from HMRC.
Oh, my word. So this is something that actually, you know, people should be starting to get really quite worried if they're not doing all the right things and realizing that it isn't just a case of, well, I'll keep sourcing until such time as I've made my first million and then I'll start trying to find the paperwork.
Yeah, I don't get me wrong. I mean, you could get away with 1 or 2 deals.
Yeah.
Never. What HMRC are now doing is they're doing their own due diligence. So if you have a limited company and you sign up that limited company through Companies House and you go off and you co-source, there's a lot of courses and people on social media tell you that you can do. And then you come to think, well, I don't want to share my fee anymore. I want to keep it to myself. So I'm going to register and I'm going to register with HMRC. What happens is that HMRC, when you register, they're dip testing and doing due diligence on, I don't know how many they're choosing or how they choose, but they're doing due diligence on Companies House.
Oh.
And if you've registered a period of time prior to registering with them, they're immediately issuing fines. As I say, we've seen 3 in the last 3 months, 2 at 1,500, 1 at 1,700.
Yes, which is, you know, that wipes out quite a bit of profit, particularly for those who are not very with it and haven't got all the right bits of paper or knowledge and probably don't have any terms and conditions either.
The vast majority of sourcing agents in the UK haven't got a clue how to operate legally day to day. They could have a bit of insurance if it's legitimate. They could have the registrations, but registering and having a bit of insurance is not full compliance. You are registering for supervision, which kind of implies they're going to monitor you for something.
Yes.
Or what are they monitoring you for?
It's been very interesting because, of course, traditionally it's always been the estate agent who's been the bad boy in the whole property world, hasn't it? You know, you really don't need 2 brain cells to be an estate agent. You know, there's no course to do it. There's no anything really. But of course, property markers come along and, you know, most good agents now will expect all their staff to go in and do level 1, 2, and 3 and all that sort of thing. Yet, people who work for themselves almost see finding out about things, going on courses, investing in themselves as a bit of a waste of money. That's not how we should view it, is it?
No, it's not. I think, but one of the problems with the private education sector for the property investment sector and deal packaging and sourcing is that from what I can gather from telephone calls, the courses are fine as far as how you do it.
Yeah.
Problem that we have is how to do it legally that isn't talked about or covered very, very basically in insurance and register and you're fine, or do a couple of deals and save up. But sadly, that is not the case anymore. And to be honest, I can't remember who said it, but should we be judged by how we do one thing as to how we do everything? And if you're going to set up a company and run unprofessionally without knowing exactly what's involved, what does that say about your business ethic in the first place? And a lot of investors are losing hundreds of thousands of pounds to unscrupulous sourcing agents year on year.
Yes, and I think that's what we all forget is that you could be the best sourcer in the world. You could be the most ethical person in the world, but you are going to be tarnished by those who don't work properly. So, you know, that if you get out and it's just a genuine misunderstanding, then life's going to be a problem. And of course, the other thing is to be a successful sourcer, you do need clients. You know, this is the unfortunate things. And to have clients, you do have to be out there. Now, I think you said that there's quite an amazing statistic about how many estate agents there are as opposed to the number of sources you can find on LinkedIn, for instance.
Yeah, estate agents, although I haven't checked it recently, there's in the region of 24, 25,000 estate agents across the UK. If you search LinkedIn for estate agents, it kind of comes up. If you search for sourcing agents, we found about 15 to 20 different titles that sourcing agents use to try to get around having to be compliant, or I'm not a sourcing agent, so I don't have to do all of that. And I don't have a list in front of me, but property introducers, property searchers, deal packagers, property sourcers, sourcing agents, all sorts of different titles. There's north of 10,000 on LinkedIn at the moment.
That's quite a lot. And of course, they're relatively simple as well with today's download facilities and things like that for people to be able to put you on a list and to work through and find you eventually. And of course, the other thing I always think people have got to remember is that there are two parts of this, aren't there? Forget the property bit. You've got an investor who's paying money, and some people go, well, they won't be able to afford me if I price myself properly so that I can afford to do all this. Well, they're going to make a hell of a lot of money out of you if you've done your job properly. So why can't they pay you properly? And you should be able to make sure that you've got the funds to have all the regulations done, shouldn't you?
I think it's a twofold education, that the journey that we are on at this moment in time. One is the sourcing agents, yes, and getting them legal, operating legally, ethically and professionally. But the other one is educating the investors that work with the sourcing agents to understand how the law sits and what is expected of the sourcing agent, because they're just not used to being asked the level of questions that we should be doing. So sources will come to me and say, no investor is going to give me that level of information. And my comment is, but you have to build that relationship up.
Yeah.
You can't just have a list of 100 investors that have said, I want a two-bedroomed vanilla buy-to-let in this geographical area, and then just send a load of deals out and say, right, when you accept it, you pay me $3,000 and then we'll send it to solicitors. That's in breach of money laundering regulations.
Yeah.
So HMRC expects you to have done what they call KYC, which is know your customer.
Right.
In order to show that you stand the cat in hell's chance of knowing whether they're attempting to defraud, avoid tax, or launder money.
Yeah.
And how can you do that if all you've got is a list of 100 investors and all they've done is filled in a form telling you what type of property they want and the geographical location? You haven't done the job.
Yeah, you don't know much about them, do you?
Not much, no. Not to the point where HMRC would accept that as being ID verification and client due diligence. And what a lot of sourcing agents do is they'll research to a point about high street estate agents. So if I explain about how the high street estate agent has to operate, when the new anti-money laundering regulations came in around 2014, HMRC negotiated, I think through PropertyMark actually, with estate agents as to when certain tasks had to be carried out. So if you're a high street estate agent, the person that pays your fee is the seller. They are your contracted client. You have to have done ID verification, proof that they have a right to sell the property and where they live, etc., prior to marketing out that deal. That's a given because most of us have sold houses or whatever it is that we've done. As far as the high street estate agent is concerned, the buyer, when the buyer comes and makes an offer and it's accepted, they can decide the risk level that that buyer poses to them. Now, if that buyer is going to live in the property, the risk of money laundering is incredibly low. So they can do what's known as simplified due diligence. And basically, that means just a copy of a driving license or a passport, proof of address, and they're done, if they do that. Now, a lot of sources are saying, well, we'll do that with our buyers when they've accepted the deal that we've sent out. But sadly, that doesn't work because the buyer is your contracted client if they're going to buy the deal. So you have to have done the due diligence prior to forming the business relationship. Now, the business relationship does not have to be a written and signed contract. It can be a verbal agreement to work together.
Oh, yes, that's not what I thought you were going to say. Mm. Yes.
Well, if someone's filled in a form on your website stating, this is what I want you to look for me for, this is a geographical area, this is how much I want to pay, that's a business relationship saying, I want you to go up and work for me. Before you go off and do that, you should be carrying out ID verification and client due diligence based on your overall business risk assessment that's in place for your business. Now, this is where most sourcing agents fall over. They have no idea what legally required documents they have to have in place. And it's kind of like anything else. You get documents from a course on one of those discs that they give you. And you look at the documents and you think, well, what do I do with that?
Yes. How, you know, what worth is it? Is it just a case of downloading it and putting my fancy logos on, or?
Yeah, do I just swap my business name in, and what does it all mean? When do I send it? Do I have to get it signed? By the way, I've got an NDA. Is that worth the paper it's written on? No. Oh. Rip it up, bin it, and don't bother with it. It's knowing how you should be operating day to day, but it's getting the investors to understand what that process is and when it has to be carried out as a protection for them as much as anything else. Because money can be loaned on the sale just as much as it can be on the purchase. So from an investor perspective, you may not give a damn that the sourcing agent hasn't carried out due diligence on you when you've agreed to buy a deal. But what you will give a damn about is if they haven't done it on the seller that they're direct to, or the estate agent hasn't, or your solicitor fails to do it, and it's the tenant that's selling that property and not the owner, and technically then it's not yours, you haven't bought it, and you're losing a lot of money. And these things happen.
Yeah, they do. And that's, you know, it's getting less and less so in that, you know, even land registry is being slightly more helpful. But yeah. I mean, there were some horror stories where people had intercepted post and were able to sell properties well away from it. There's a case that went through very recently where it took, what was it, a vicar 5 years to get his home back. You know, unreal.
It's terrible. But the other thing is this is that it's not just that someone who shouldn't be selling it can sell it. What if money is being laundered on that sale?
Yes. And I think we forget just how much money is laundered through property because it's so easy. I mean, the trouble is, I think everyone thinks property is expensive, you know, and they're thinking London prices. Well, I work predominantly in Stoke-on-Trent. You know, I don't think I ever paid more than 70 grand for a house. Many people could put their hands on 70 grand in cash if required.
And the thing is that people say to me, well, money laundering, as you say, is the big cities, it's multi-million pound properties. No, it's not. These money launderers aren't daft. They don't go for multi-million pound. I mean, the Russian oligarchs might, but there are other groups and they will buy portfolios or they will build up a portfolio of two-bedroom terrace houses in a street. Recently, the National Crime Agency seized a portfolio Liverpool way where instead of flipping the properties and cleaning the money quickly, they saw the market was rising quickly. So they held them and were doing drip stealing and whatever else they were doing out of these properties, but they got caught. So it's wrong to think that it's just multi-million pound deals or very, very excessively overpriced houses. It is not. It could be that portfolio that you're selling in Liverpool or Manchester or Stoke-on-Trent or Burnley where I live or, you know, anywhere basically in the UK. And if you don't know the questions to ask the sellers and the buyers, cover your back because nobody else is going to do it for you. You run the risk of having the wool pulled over your eyes because these guys know what they're doing and they're determined.
Absolutely. I think, you know, it is very tempting when you're new in property or you've been doing it a while and you haven't quite got to grips with the fact that life has changed and you hadn't noticed it because you've been so busy doing stuff, to realize that not everyone out there is nice. Some people will see you for a mug and you know, definitely go out of their way to be difficult. But also there is always another client, isn't there? So you don't have to say, I've got to take this person who's from Dubai or wherever, because without it, I can't get another client.
No, the investors out there to work with aren't the problem. The problem is understanding exactly what they want and matching it and getting paid. Getting the deal over, I'm doubting falling over, as you know, from buying property. There's a lot can go wrong between handing it over to the solicitor and exchange and completion.
There is. And so there's also a new strand of Saucer who I came across with one of my clients who had bought a cracking little deal. I mean, there was nothing wrong with the deal at all, except for the fact that he had had to pay a sizable figure as the sourcing fee up front before he was even allowed to see the deal.
Yeah.
That was what secured the deal for him. He had no idea what he was buying, except that it was in this particular town.
Yeah. A lot of courses teach you to do it that way because they say if you don't do, the buyer will go behind your back. Well, there's two things around that. One, you should be building the relationship with the buyer and the know, like, trust should be built up.
Yeah.
Two, most investors don't come to the sector just wanting one property. And if you provide them the service, they will continue to work with you. That relationship builds.
Yeah.
And three, you know, you should be securing your investor.
Yes. So what you're saying there is that they'd worked hard on getting the money in from the person they were selling the property to, but they hadn't actually done enough work with the person who's selling the property they're selling on. Because if they'd done that bit, that would have been totally secure.
Because basically they're finding a deal and then trying to find a buyer. But actually, for money laundering purposes, as in the case that you've just illustrated, as soon as your contact paid that money up front, they should have been stopping it and doing due diligence on them and ID verification, but they won't have done because they don't understand the process. So you need to be working with the investor and finding the investor, building the relationship, understanding exactly what the investor is looking for, where they're looking for it, but understanding exactly how the investor is going to assess that deal. Everyone assesses a deal differently. We all have different criteria as to what makes it work for us, whether it's a buy-to-let, a HMO, whatever the strategy is makes no difference. And most of us, if we're experienced, we use spreadsheets with formulas in.
But it is also the fact that you brought up the fact that there is a degree of work required on a laptop or a desktop or whatever. And more people are veering away from the spreadsheet, which is a very handy bit of kit, you know, as long as the, you know, good stuff in, good stuff out and all that, but are now starting to work almost predominantly with some of the flasher bits of kit, which, you know, you pump in, you want to buy this, that and the other. And Rightmove immediately tells you you've got seven things in this area. And I certainly got sent out of the blue last week, someone who'd done just that and sent me on a text saying, I found this amazing deal, Rachel. It's so up your street. You've got to go for this. But it's got to be all processed by midday tomorrow. Well, of course, that slightly, you know, I thought, well, A, I'm not in the market. I've never spoken to you about sourcing. Yes, it is the sort of thing I do. It turned out to be in an auction and he'd found it on an auction catalogue. He'd spoken to the auction house and they went, as long as it's bought by midday tomorrow, then, you know. But of course, the auction house would do a lot of due diligence. But this in-betweeny man wasn't.
No, not at all.
And that's not a deal either.
No, it's not. And the problem that we have with people, the sourcing agents taking large fees up front. And the largest fees I've seen up front, I think it was 76,000.
Oh, my word. Uncomfortable.
Portfolio, believe it or not, or rent-to-rent properties, and it was so much per property.
Right.
And they had significant problems in getting it back because the portfolio didn't exist.
Oh, tricky.
And so, you know, that there's some guidance for investors to follow. You know, do more due diligence on a sourcer than you would do on your next car that you buy.
Right. And one of them, presumably, is understanding what the redress schemes and the ombudsman and people do. What do they do? Who works in that field?
There are two redress schemes that work in the field. One is the property ombudsman, the TPO. They are an ombudsman that they provide redress services for the property sector and property redress scheme, PRS. And they're both the government approved bodies for our sector for property sales. They also cover lettings and management as well. What they do is they police it, for want of a better description, complaints.
Right.
But they do some upfront policing as well on their own, and that is increasing now more than it ever was. So if you're working with a sourcing agent, one of the things to check is that they're actually registered with one of the redress schemes. That's one of the things. And if you're not happy with what has happened, you have to make a full complaint to the sourcer and go through their sourcing process, and the vast majority don't have a complaints process.
Oh, yeah, that is quite a separate thing to normal things, isn't it?
Yep, which legally we are supposed to have a complaints process, which is laid out for us as a process in itself. If you're not happy with the result of that investigation that the solicitor does into your complaint, you can then upgrade it to the redress scheme that they are involved in. And this is where we found that the redress schemes are not happy with huge amounts of money being taken up front.
Right, yes. No one takes, I mean, even a solicitor doesn't take great chunks up front, do they?
Estate agents don't take fees up. And people say, well, I'm frightened of not being paid. Well, then you're not building the relationships and you're not working in the right way.
Yes. I mean, you know, traditionally it was always you got paid on exchange. You got a reservation fee.
Yeah.
Because the reservation fee was refundable, wasn't it? Yeah.
But there are difficulties at the moment with what are known as refundable fees.
Oh, right.
So a lot of sourcing agents will say the fee is refundable. So you pay me £3,000 upfront, but if something goes wrong, I will refund it. Well, one is probably they've spent it and don't have it to refund.
Yep.
Number two is if it is declared as refundable, it should be held in a client account and not a part of their business account and shouldn't be touched. Sourcing at the moment, you can't get client accounts.
So how do you work that? If on the one hand, you're supposed to have a separate account and on the other hand, you can't get one.
Well, lettings agents are struggling getting client accounts and they have to have them to hold the payments that come in.
Yes.
And it's the banking sector that is withdrawing from it because they're being hammered with fines by HMRC.
Oh, dear. So I can see a slight awful vortex appearing here where no one can do anything because the wicked banks are holding us ransom.
So our sourcing business has never taken a refundable fee up front. We just don't operate that way. To start off with, we didn't take a fee at all. But what I found over the years, and I've been doing it now, I don't know, 12 plus years, approaching 13 years, is that there are as many time wasters in the investment sector as there are in the sourcing sector. So you need something to filter people by. Now, our due diligence process tends to put a lot of investors off saying, I'm not prepared to do that. Well, fine, go work somewhere else. But we charge a £350 registration fee upfront. So we have a chat with investors and we can have several chats. It can take 6 months for them to decide that they want to work. They'll go off and do due diligence, research, stalk me, do whatever it is that they
do. Yeah, that's a general thing, isn't it? Is she doing what we think she's doing? Yeah.
That's absolutely fine. Until they say, yes, we really want to work with you. And then it's right, pay me £350. At that point, I will start taking you through the ID and client due diligence process. But why do we have to pay that? Well, it costs me £1,200-£1,300 a year to stay legal.
Yeah.
And if you mess me about, and you can mess me about for several months, I get absolutely nothing. This £350, if I take 4 or 5 clients on board, ish covers that compliance for the year, regardless of deals. And if you say you've got £500,000 in the bank, what's £350?
Absolutely. And it is, and not only, but it's not only the fact they've got 300, you know, however much money in the bank, it's the fact that they've got future earnings coming off what you're going to produce for them as well. So this should never be a problem for a good client. And you only want to work with good clients as well.
You do, and you don't need hundreds.
No.
You work with a maximum of 2 or 3 at any given time, because what you don't want is 2 or 3 clients wanting exactly the same thing. You are going to seriously upset 2 of them when one of them buys it and the other 2 couldn't see it because they were at work. So if you're going to work with 2 or 3 clients, make sure that they have different strategies that you're sourcing for so that you don't disappoint them.
Or you have, which when I was doing it years and years ago, you know, I don't think I worked with more than people, I think about 10 or 21 time. I knew that within 10, there was a whole chunk who weren't going to work this month because they were finishing another project. So they came in waves and you knew when they were ready for the next one to come along. And I only sourced one type of building. So it was really very simple. So it is about, again, but that's matching your clients to what you do rather than trying to be everything to all men.
Well, that's what a lot of sourcers try to do. They try to source for any strategy and for all of the UK. Now, there is no way that someone who is based in London can know or understand the property market in Liverpool.
No.
Unless they have a connection with it.
Yes, it is very different.
It's completely different. And for me, the level that we charge our fees is for the bespoke service that we provide, the boots on the ground that we provide, and the knowledge of the local areas that we work in that we provide.
Yes.
Not that we're going to search Rightmove from here until the cows come home for places that we've never visited and we couldn't even pinpoint them on a map.
Yes, because the other thing, of course, is that if you are buying, which is, you know, very trendy, or sort of normal is a better word for it at the moment, is to buy a property that's already tenanted. In the past, no one did that because it wasn't vacant possession and all the rest of it. Now it's quite mainstream. But it's not unknown for you to be sold a property with a tenant in, which afterwards you discover haven't paid any rent for a year.
Yep, because they haven't done the due diligence. And yep. We're working on at the moment something that has it's been coming in stages. It's called material information, and it's being governed, if you like, under consumer protection regulations. And there's certain levels of data that has to be provided. Estate agents and sourcing agents come under it as well, whereby if it's material information that would affect the buyer's decision to even view the property, it has to be declared. And of course, if a tenant hasn't paid for 12 months and is now sitting in there and buried in it and changed the locks,
yeah,
that you would absolutely want to know, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Yes. And of course, if you're this so catches out new investors, isn't it? Because they still have the faith. Perhaps I'm just very long in the tooth and rather jaded. They have the faith that everyone is going to play by the rules.
Yeah.
Everyone is going to be good. And I know that, you know, if you are trying to evict someone, everything's stacked against you for a start. So you've got to have all the right paperwork. You've got to have done everything, even if it's not you. It's got to be in the right place.
It does. And for the sourcing agent perspective, if you are sourcing a property that will remain tenanted upon purchase, you need to have and carried out the due diligence on that tenancy, that the agreement meets standards, that all the documentation was issued on time in a format that was accurate, that a deposit is held in a legal point, and have all of this evidence ready for the buyer to pass on to their solicitor for them to carry out and double up on the due diligence as well. So that it's actually nailed on the head.
Yes.
When it goes through, that, you know, your buyer can see everything. It's, for argument's sake, these people that do these rent-to-rent deals or service accommodation, and it's on a buy-to-let mortgage, which wouldn't allow subletting, you know, it's kind of buyer beware for some of these. Mm. Deals. They're selling them to investors who are really inexperienced and just trust that they're being told the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. And sadly, that doesn't often happen.
No, absolutely. And I think if you are, you know, if you are going to source, because I loved sourcing. I thought it was fun. You know, oh my word, you know, to be paid just to go window shopping or go and talk to estate agents and things like that. I mean, bliss, isn't it? You know, it is. It is something that people should do, but realize that they're not going to make a year's salary in the first month by doing two deals. This is something that you've got to ease into, because you've got to practice your speeches, you've got to practice your interaction with people, and so that you know, the agents get used to you. You get very, even vendors get the feeling straight away from you that you are what you are.
Yeah, and that you know what you're talking about, and that you're legitimate.
Yes.
I think you're just there to try to royally rob them and offer 50% below market value, because your buyer's going to double your sourcing fee if you get it. You know, because that's another thing. They're vulnerable. This term BMV is actually a red flag to HMRC for money laundering.
Is it?
Yeah. Plus, if that person who is selling is made insolvent or bankrupt within the next 5 or 6 years, the insolvency officer that's appointed can claw back the difference from the sale value and what it should have been sold for.
Tricky. And who would be liable in that instance?
The buyer.
Ooh, yes.
Your client is a sourcing agent.
And so in that instance, a client who's been hit by that, they're going to come straight back to you on your insurance, aren't they, and sue you.
PI insurance is going to get very hot. And a lot of sourcing agents' PI insurance states estate agent. And unless it's clarified with the insurance provider that you're actually property sourcing, it won't cover you.
Right. And so how easy is it to get insurance that has all the right ticks and bells and whistles?
Through our national association, we are in partnership with a company called Insurance Desk.
Oh, John Cox. Yum. Yes.
John Yum. Cox. Yeah, I've known John for years. And Josh, who manages a lot of the insurance for them now, we're in partnership with them. So on our NAPSA site, there's a link. You can go and there's an application form. It takes you straight through to their desk and it sends them a form that you're interested in insurance. And if you're actually a member of NAPSA, you get up to 20% discount on your insurance for being a member and proving that you're compliant.
And am I right in thinking that this is not a one-off thing, is it? You have to do it every year. You can't say 20 years ago I signed up.
No. No, no. All of your compliance is renewable each year. So if you allow about £1,000 to £1,200, but that's dependent on the redress scheme that you join, the level that you join at, how many are in your company, and where you acquire insurance from, and levels of it. So that's an approximation for an average type business with one person in.
That's very cost effective. I mean, this is the other slight bugbear I have with property, is that there is this assumption that in order to do property, you don't need seed capital. If you went and created a shoe company, you'd need seed capital to get your first, you know, year's worth of stock. This is a basic, I'm open for business. The cost of opening is this, and I have to find the money before I can open.
Yeah, you do. You know, any business has a setup cost. There's education costs. There's documentation costs. The time that it takes for you to learn and understand is probably more expensive in your time, in the learning and the studying, than actually the setup of the business. But, you know, would you expect a solicitor to set up and not know what they were doing?
No, absolutely. Yes. And to you've got, I think that's actually a very good question, because I think if we all go, if I was X wanting this, you know, this work done for me, what would I feel? How involved would I expect the other person to be? What would I expect their knowledge level to be?
Yeah.
And the problem is, so there are many people who I've come across who are very, very confident. But if you scratch the surface, there's nothing there.
Yeah, that's a real problem on both the sourcing side and the investor side. When we first initially build relationships with investors, I won't work with them unless they are very experienced in the sector and they prove to me that they are.
Right.
Or if they're new to the sector, that they've taken independent finance investment advice from someone who's qualified to look at them, look at the current position, the finances that they have, where they are, and say to them, we feel in your position, the best thing for you to do investing is X, Y, and Z. And if that isn't property, then that's fine. I've done them a favor.
Yes, yes.
But I can't advise them on that, because we absolutely must not give investment advice.
No.
We are not qualified to give investment advice. And so we won't work.
Yes, because I suppose that's because we're not covered by FCA, are we?
We're not. No, we're not FCA registered, nor would you want to be quite honest. If you think the legislation and the regulation for sourcing is heavyweight, forget FCA governance. It's 10 times the level. But if you think about it, you're not qualified to give investment advice. A lot of sourcing agents have never bought a property and owned a property themselves. They've never renovated a property.
Yes. And that comes on to another problem, which people do, which is, you know, estimated cost of repairs and refurbishment. And you go, ooh, right, that's an interesting figure. I'm not quite sure how they got to that one.
Maybe 10 years ago. That knowledge is something I had it because we'd bought, owned and renovated properties ourselves.
Yep.
We've invested ourselves. The last project that we did was we flipped a block of flats. We weren't planning on flipping it, but that was how it worked out. So we have hands-on knowledge. And now a lot of people don't. And they say, how do I get it? And I said, talk to investors that invest in your area, in the strategy that you're interested in. Ask them what projects they've done, the most recent ones, and ask them what level of refurb they did and what the approximate costs were.
Yeah, yeah.
And learn and build relationships with local builders. It can be very, very difficult, because if you go and saying, I'm a sourcing agent and I've got a list of 100 investors and we'll be putting tons of work your way, they'll just laugh you out.
They will. As I say. I mean, this is what having run a building company, I was always amazed that people constantly assume the default position is that all builders are stupid. And all builders can't see a good thing when it comes across their threshold.
Oh, yeah.
And of course, actually, builders may not be the quickest on reading and writing, but what they can do is read someone, because their payment schemes rely on you paying them.
Yeah. Yeah.
So they read you, don't they?
And when they come off these courses with these scripts, you know, you speak to estate agents. And I mean, we speak to estate agents weekly, basically. And they'll just laugh at you. And they say, well, how do you do it, Tina? What do you go in and say to them? Do you say, I'm the buyer? Absolutely not, because you're not. And that's a lie. And that is not a great way to start a business relationship. Would you like someone to lie to you as a start of a business relationship? No.
Yeah.
So before you go in and you start doing that, understand exactly how you operate professionally. And by the way, a recent report where they gauged compliance in the high street estate agency sector from information provided by high street estate agents, estimated that 66% of high street estate agents don't understand money laundering either.
So no, it's a big subject, isn't it?
It's a huge subject. So if you go into an estate agent, as we do, and I mean, we've built the relationships up over years, but if we're going into an area that they've forgotten us maybe, or it's new to us, I'll go in and sit down with them and arrange a coffee with the lead agents and say, look, we're an agent like you. We work with the buyers. We have done full ID verification, client due diligence and source of funds checks. We've done electronic checks. We're happy to share that information with you, or we will give you the contact details of a buyer when a price is agreed for you to carry out whatever due diligence you need. Their solicitors are in place. All documentation is in place. We want to work with you. This is exactly what they want. This is the formula that we have to hit. Do you have anything currently on the books that might match that, that we can have a look at? Or can you let me know as soon as you believe something's coming on board? That's it.
So what I'm hearing from you is that being a property sourcer is not just about going to a few networking meetings and getting a bunch of cards and getting these nice investors onto an email list and then having a lovely time floating about in an area, briefly floating in and sort of schmoozing with estate agents and being believable. And then that's it. You're telling me that actually this is a business. There's a lot to do before you can even start to go, right, I'm ready to hit the ground. And not only that, but you've got to do this with every single client you come across.
Yeah.
So this is not what everyone thinks. You've burst my bubble and probably many other people's today. You know, this is not about license just to go property viewing. You know, I adore property. It's one of my passions.
To be honest, the sourcing agent, to go and look for a deal, everybody's idea of a deal is completely different.
That
people walk through us. Deals that I wouldn't have touched with a barge pole, but that's my idea of a deal.
Yeah.
Everyone's idea of a deal is different. And as long as you understand that they're experienced in the sector, they know what they're doing, they know the figures, and that's what they want, then that's fine by me, as long as they prove to me that they understand it and they know, and that's what floats their boat. That's great.
Yeah. And also, I think we've also got to learn that there are shutters on some people. So, you know, last week I was at a networking meeting where I sat next to a young chap who very confidently told me I was very in the wrong about this whole, you know, sort of compliance and everything to do. And I just thought, I've said my bit. I'm now just going to let you get on with it because there's no point in arguing anything else. And of course, inevitably, somebody came and asked me about him and I said I wouldn't touch him with a barge pole for the following reasons.
Yeah, exactly. And the problem is they listen to people standing on stages or online courses. And I say this to anyone that before they work with me, don't trust what I say or anybody else. Go off and research it for yourself. It is your company. It is your responsibility. If HMRC research you and find out that you're not compliant, it doesn't make a jot of difference that so-and-so said I only had to do this, or so-and-so said I only have to do that. Ignorance is no defense in law. HMRC will just slap a fine on you.
Absolutely. And so you raised very early on, and I forgot to pick it up, and I will do now, this concept of not really being a property sourcer, but you are a property sourcer because you found the deal and then you handed it to your business partner who works for a different company, but you get paid. You're not really property sourcing, therefore you don't need to be covered, do you?
No. If you have done any work that an estate that will be considered to be estate agency work, you have to have full compliance in place. What they say is, I'm an introducer. And an introducer is just, it happens a lot in the corporate world with new builds and new build companies where someone will introduce somebody who is interested in buying from the builder.
Yeah.
So they have a name and an email address, and the person that they've spoken to knows it's a block of flats in Manchester, and that's all that they know. But there's been no negotiation, there's no viewings, there's no anything, then you might well get away with it being an introduction for an introduction fee. But that isn't 50% of the sourcing fee. If you want to direct the seller, you viewed the property, you've spoken to them about how much is acceptable as a price, you've done due diligence, you've pulled together a presentation, whether it's just a brief details or not, you're carrying out estate agency, well, you have to have full compliance in place. Basically, an introducer is someone that just has contact telephone number, email address, and a name of somebody that's interested in a project or whatever it is, and you hand it on.
Yeah, well, that's burst a lot of bubbles, isn't it?
Yeah, I regularly pull the rug out from a lot of people, I have to say. I regularly do. But I'm with you. I will get people who will just pull the shutters down and say, well, I don't believe you. Well, that's absolutely fine. But don't come crying to me when you get the letter from HMRC, because the heaviest fine I've seen for a sourcing agent is £6,300.
Oh, yes.
Not knowing what they were doing and trading.
And that's not, and it's not good for your reputation.
No, it's not. It really isn't. Do you really want to be operating and really not knowing what you're doing? The sourcing agents who are live on our National Association site, and investors can search the National Association site geographically and by strategy for our live members, and we manually take them through the due diligence and ID verification process. We check everything about them manually.
Yes. And I was asked, in fact, a few weeks ago about, you know, which course should someone go on? And I said, well, there are actually two sides to this. I said, you need to go on to your course so that you get the legal side, you get all the paperwork, you understand the nitty gritty of what is required, the boring bits, so to speak. And then you can go and spend as much money as you like on the most enormous course, learning the pink and fluffy bits, but without the stuff on, you know, the accreditation and making sure you've got the legal paperwork, you shouldn't be doing the rest of it. No point. Can't work.
The day-to-day sourcing course, and iSight teaches them the whole sourcing process.
Yeah. So,
what I say to people is, if you really, really want to be a sourcing agent and you decided that you absolutely want to do it, do our course. And then at the end of it, if you feel that you still need some more knowledge on sourcing, just ask the questions. I've been doing it for 12 years. You know, you don't need to pay me £3,000 for the privilege of me telling you how to, you know, find investors or anything like that. You know, it's not rocket science. The actual act of sourcing is not rocket science. It can be taught in 10 minutes. How to do it legally and professionally is a nitty gritty bit that you really need to understand.
Absolutely. Now, I know you write for one of the property magazines. I can't remember off the top of my head which one it is.
Blue Bricks at the moment. I'm doing bi-monthly articles for them because it's released bi-monthly, but on a regular basis, maybe once or twice a year, I appear in YPN as well. So, yeah, we do a lot of writing of articles and such.
Yeah, so this shouldn't come out of the blue, really, for people by surprise, which is great. Now, how can people find you? What are your emails? I'll have them in the link, so don't worry. But people do like to hear. Some people will click straight off this going, oh, got to go now. Well, how do I get hold of her?
The best email to get hold of me on is Tina, T-I-N-A, at NAPSA, that's N-A-P-S-A .org.uk, which is our National Association email. It's direct to me. No one else picks up my emails. I do it. You can find me all over the place on Facebook and on LinkedIn just by searching for Tina Walsh. If you put Tina Walsh and property sourcing compliance, I appear all over the place on Google. I'm top slots in a lot of them at the moment for Tina Walsh property sourcing compliance. I'll come up. I did have a book up for sale, A Word of Warning, Please. You can still buy it secondhand on Amazon from people that are reselling it. We have stopped the live sales because the book is now out of date. And I cannot keep it up to date fast enough with the regulation changes and the interpretation changes. So we put all of that through our training courses and through support and guidance through our National Association.
Fantastic. Well, thank you very much. Well, thank you so much, Tina, for finding the time to come and talk to me this afternoon. I think you'll thrill and depress in equal measure as people listen today.
I have no doubt. But as long as either it wakens up investors to the fact that they can lose a lot of money and they need to be more careful, and sourcing agents that it may not be quite as simple as you believed, then we've done a job.
Fantastic. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to The Property Solopreneur with me, Rachel Troughton. If you've enjoyed this episode, do hit subscribe and kindly leave a review and share this podcast with anyone you think it would help on their property journey. If you'd like to get hold of my guide for building a successful property business, go to racheltroughton.com/checklist. We only live one life. So let's get your dream a reality through building a profitable property business.